The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here is your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. It is currently about 12 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Our guest in the studio today is Marie Most. She's with Schurer Hospital, one of the hats she wears. And we're going to be talking about first aid for kids. This is the first in the month-long series for Parenting Awareness Month. And we're talking about what parents need to know, and it'd be good for grandparents and others too who maybe babysit the kids to have an idea of what to do in case something happens. So thanks for being with us.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay. First of all, parents need to know about first aid. Do they need to go beyond just the common sense? I mean, do they really need to study a lot more than they're doing?
Well, children are apt to be injured. There's always those things that are going to come up, and it's always good to be prepared. Know what to say, know what to do, know if this is serious and they need to take them somewhere for treatment, or is this something that we can handle at home? And so it's just always good to be prepared. The more that they know, the better they are able to cope during the situation of the crisis.
Now, parents, first of all, I would think, have to control their own feelings when these things happen, rather than you know I don't know nothing about birthing no babies, you know, from, you know, like Gone with the Wind or something. They have to be the calm, cool heads, because the kids will take their cues from the parents. If they are freaking out that this is really serious, then the kids are going to think that.
Absolutely. One of the most important things is just to take a deep breath, be calm, just, you know, get yourself under control and be able to know that you're able to cope with this and be able to display that to the child as well. So if you freak out, like you said, the child's going to freak out too. And so just take a deep breath, realize that we can handle this, we'll take care of this. And even though it may be a serious injury, it doesn't help any to freak out and to get panicking at that point. It's better to just take your time and be able to think clearly during those times of emergency.
And if you get the kid riled up, he can even do more damage than has already been done. The whole point is calm them down and take care of the problems. If coming from a bachelor, we never had any.
Well, I know that when I was growing up, my cousin ran through a glass door and cut her hand really bad. And she was okay until she saw it, and then she started panicking. And so often, if we can just keep the child under control, don't let them see how bad it is, see how worried you are, then they are not going to panic as much as they could.
Okay. Are there certain types of first aid that are really important they need to know? I mean, obviously bandaging and knowing when it's good for a Band-Aid and some Bactine and when you need to go see the doctor or the ER. I mean, you need to know the thresholds.
Right, and it's important. Well, let's start out with a cut, as in like going through a glass door or something like that. If it's a serious cut, if there's a lot of bleeding, then you'll need to put a pressure on that wound, a direct pressure. There used to be some thought where you need to put pressure on a pressure point or something, but that was just too hard for people to understand, to know exactly where it is. So just put pressure right over top of the wound. If you have sterile gauze, that's wonderful and lovely, but most of us don't keep that in our hip pocket. And so whatever you have clean that's handy, a paper towel, a napkin, a washcloth, a t-shirt, whatever, the cleaner you can get it, the better. And then just put direct pressure on that and just hold direct pressure on that wound until it stops bleeding. It may slow. If it continues to bleed through your gauze or through your t-shirt or whatever you have, don't take that original one off. Put another one on top of that and continue to put pressure on it, because even though it seems like it's not stopped at all, if you take that original one off, it's going to open up the wound and going to make it bleed even more.
And also kind of wick up more blood because it's clean as opposed to one that's saturated.
Right. So you just keep pressure on there, and then once you get it to stop, you can use like a roller gauze or some other way to tie that bandage in place as you transport them to the hospital or wait for 911 for the ambulance to get there depending on the level of the injury.
Any hard and fast rules about cleaning a wound before you do this? I mean, I wouldn't think you'd want to put pressure on a wound if there's still a piece of glass from the doorway in there, you know. And so, but then I've also heard stories where if you take the projectile out, they bleed worse.
Right. Generally, what you want to do is leave that object in place. Never take a penetrating object out, because it may be putting some pressure against one of those blood vessels and actually slowing the bleeding down. And so, basically, if you have an object in a wound, if you can secure it in place and then put pressure on, that would be the ideal.
Just don't drive it in further.
Right, right. And a big wound, we're talking a major gash, there's no doubt they're going to need medical care. Don't worry about cleaning it. Just get them to the hospital. There's no need to traumatize it more. Cleaning it, let's get them to the hospital and let the professionals do the cleaning and the sewing and all that will be required with that. Now, we used to talk a lot about tourniquets as well, you know, if it's a major wound. And tourniquets have kind of fallen in and out of favor.
Usually it was the ones who tried to use them for head wounds. But
that's right. That's not a good thing. And, you know, every good Boy Scout would know how to put a tourniquet on. Well, what was happening sometimes is people would put a little cut in their finger, and the good Boy Scout would go slap a tourniquet around their upper arm, and then they would cause permanent nerve damage in their whole arm, and they would lose the use of that arm for the rest of their life. And so we've been more reluctant to use tourniquets, except in a way to save their life. And we're talking a severed limb, a blood vessel that's pumping blood across the room, some of those kinds of things. Then yes, it is appropriate to use a tourniquet at that point. But
you're scaring parents when you're talking about blood vessels squirting across
the room. Well, I guess I'm more familiar with that, and so it's not quite such a gruesome thing to me. But yes, it's only in those very severe emergencies that you would need to use a tourniquet.
Okay. And basically, what is the measure for, can you treat it at home? Is it going to need stitches? Is it going to require an ER visit or just a trip to the doctor? Because there's all different levels and all costs different. And I know cost isn't really a factor when it's your kid. You want them treated right. But, you know, they don't want you in the emergency room if it doesn't really emergency. So, well, is there a threshold? Is there something? Is it something, if it's going to be cosmetic, if it's on the face, you know, then maybe you want to get them in there so it's properly stitched so there isn't a scar or minimizes a scar? I don't know.
Sure. And it's always one of those things. Well, are they sick enough to take them in? Is this injury bad enough to take them in? It's always hard to decide, and especially if it's your child, because even though I was a nurse, it was always hard for me to decide on my boys. You know, do I take them in or don't I? A couple of general rules that you can go by if this cut would require medical attention. Number one is how long is it? I generally say about an inch long will require stitches. Under that, you can consider using butterflies at home, treating it at home, seeing if you can pull it together. But it also depends on where it's located. If it's on the face, people would rather not have scars on the face. And so it would be more apt to take them in for treatment there. Or if it is over a joint, a cut on an elbow, a cut on a finger, something like that, it would not be as apt to heal as if it were just on the arm or something like that. And then also, if it's got ragged edges, it's probably easier to heal if it was stitched up. And if it's real deep, it would need to be stitches, or if it's bleeding a lot, any of those things, you would for sure want to get some medical treatment. And basically, if in doubt, take them in and let them be checked out in the emergency room or in the ready care clinic or wherever.
Because, you know, I don't want to have every little cut go in there, because there are people with real emergencies coming in and you're taking up doctors' times and nurses and all that stuff. And
sure.
You want to make sure that somebody with, you know, real emergencies are taken care of.
Absolutely.
And those that can be taken care of elsewhere go elsewhere.
Sure, sure. So I would say that, you know, anytime you need to take them in, go ahead and take them in. But if you want to try to you know, it's a small wound, a cut from a knife when you're cutting the cooking or something like that, you know, you can go ahead and bandage it at home and take care of it at home.
Is there a time frame, you know, say if it hasn't clotted in 20 minutes, then maybe it's a little too big to do on its own?
For sure. I mean, it should quit bleeding within about 5 minutes.
Okay.
if you've got good clotting and things are going well, especially if you're putting pressure on it. So, and most of people will quit bleeding on their own. It's just those people who maybe have some bleeding issues or taking some medication to thin their blood, those type of things, people will bleed more often or longer, and they may need stitches more than someone who is a healthy person who clots well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when do you call 911 when you need an ambulance? Is that pretty obvious, or do you find in the healthcare profession that people aren't getting it quite right?
Well, it's always hard to know. Is this something that I can transport, or is this something that I need to have to call 911 for? And basically, any kind of life-threatening thing that you'll want to call 911, and especially as a parent. Often you're going to want to take care of that child and be with that child, hold the bleeding area, that kind of thing. If you're by yourself, you can't drive and hold the wound from bleeding. And so, you know, in those kind of situations, you need to get them to the hospital. And so you may be more apt to call 911 on those kind of situations if it's a child. And
do you need to start thinking about any other kids that you have around? If you have to go to the ER, it's not best to take them, because I'm sure the ER doesn't want a bunch of kids running around. You need to find grandma or somebody who can watch the other kids. You got to start thinking ahead on these things.
Sure, that's great to know. And even if it's just another mother, a neighbor down the road, someone that you can call in a case of emergency and can get them there to come help you with the child or help watch the other children while you're taking the one to the hospital, those types of things. That's important, and just important thing to think ahead as well.
I guess the other question that I'd have as we start going on simple cuts to begin with, what if it's not your kid? Kids visit other kids, they go to their house, and things happen. I mean, you have to treat them right away. How fast do you have to get the parent involved? And they may be at work or something. I mean, you may not even be able to track them down right away. I can see all kinds of complications and things going on in this.
Well,
that we didn't have in my day. You know, in my day, you got a cut, your friend's mom put a Band-Aid on it, you went home, and yeah, I got myself.
Well, and that's a great question, because often people think that, oh, I can't treat this child unless I have the parent right there in front of me. But as long as they're a child and they're requiring first aid, that child is known to be asking for help. Anyone who is unconscious, adult or child, is asking for help. And so you are able to treat that child, do basic first aid treatments for them, to call the hospital, to get them to the hospital. We at the emergency room are able to give life-saving measures before we're able to contact the parent. And so most parents have cell phones on them and are able to be contacted immediately. But if for some reason they're out of pocket, they're not able to be contacted, we can do whatever we need to in order to save that child's life or to treat them until we can get a hold of them. Of course, we'll try as soon as we can to contact them. And if it's just something that can wait, we will wait till the parent's able to be there. But if it's something that's life-threatening, sure, we'll treat them and take care of them.
Okay, because a lot of times these things happen and you're not home. You're with somebody else or on the road or doing something kitty, like, you know, where you do something dumb.
And you
have a little accident. Mm-hmm. We had little bikes that we used to try and ride on one wheel, which was not very smart in my day.
Sounds like typical boys, though. Yeah.
Okay. Stitches. Do they offer a problem for kids? I mean, do you find that you're going to have to be a real vigilant with the kids to keep them clean, to keep them, you know, from picking at them? Because, you know, a scab and a kid is like, you know, a magnet. You know, I'm getting that thing off, and stitches are a whole different ballgame than just simple scar or scab on your wound.
That's right, and you'll want to keep that wound clean and dry. You'll want to keep it covered, and often if you just keep it out of sight, it'll keep it out of their mind and keep them from picking on it quite so much. You'll want to cover it with some kind of Neosporin or Bacitracin, some kind of antibiotic cream to keep the bacteria out and to keep it clean and from contacting other people who may have bacteria as well. So you'll want to keep it covered and clean and dry. You don't want to let fresh stitches get wet, because it's more apt to open up and to not heal well. So you'll want to basically just keep it clean and dry until it's healed, about a week, something like that. Now, sometimes the physician will choose to glue a wound like that instead of put stitches in. And if that's a possibility, then that's a great thing for the child, because then they don't have to go through the trauma of taking the stitches out, because they are nervous about what might happen and what how it's going to feel. And it's actually, they get themselves more worked up than it actually is painful to take those stitches out. But if they can be glued, that just eases another trip to the ready care to get them out as well.
Well, I'm sure you being a nurse, you took them out at home anyway. And that's not going to hurt kids.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, there you go. Other things that happen while kids are out, they get slivers. I mean, is this something that needs to be done right away? Can they wait until they get home? Because, you know, they hurt, but they are going to get infected if you don't get it out. Is it something that needs to be done right away, or can you say, oh, that you should have your mom take care of that, you better go home?
It's better to take it out as soon as you can. It's just less traumatic, less chance of it getting infected, that type of thing. And so if you can get it out, go ahead and do it. Usually, like a sterile needle is the best way to get it out. If for some reason it's embedded in there and you don't really know it until like a day later it starts getting infected and that type of thing, then you'll want to soak it, and that will help get the infection to kind of resolve, and then go ahead and get it out with like a needle or a sterile needle. Keep it covered wherever you remove that sliver or splinter. You'll want to keep it covered with an antibiotic cream as well.
Is there any difference between one that may be wood or metal? I don't know if they would infect easier, or whether they need to come out quicker, or whether, you know.
Basically, you'll want to get both of them out. You don't want either one of them. The times that you would need medical attention are if that is in the eye or around the eye, that type of thing. Of course, you'll want to get medical attention for. Or if it is deeply embedded, if it's a really big sliver, or you're just not able to get it out yourself and it's not resolving, then you'll probably want to get medical treatment. If you can grab a hold of it with the tweezers, that's great and fine and the best, but you can't always get a hold of them. They're not always that sticking out that much.
Any surefire way to know you got it all? Because, you know, it's a sliver of wood, and it's fibrous, and you can just take a chunk of it. And it may look pretty good because it looks like you got most of it out, and then there's a little piece in there. Does it show up a day or so later that, hey, you didn't get it all?
It'll let you know in a couple of days. It'll start getting infected. It'll get red. It'll start pounding, and you'll know that you've got something else going on in there at that point. But otherwise, it's just really hard to tell if you got every little piece in, especially if it's a deeply embedded sliver as well.
I mean, our system is designed to try and get rid of some of this stuff. I mean, it's natural for us to try and get rid of some of this stuff, but it isn't always pleasant process.
That's right. It's amazing how the body's able to heal itself and is able to just be able to get rid of those kinds of infection. That's what the body is doing there with the sliver, is it's kind of isolating it and trying to rid itself of it.
What about nosebleeds? I mean, kids bump themselves, they get an elbow in the nose or something while they're horsing around. Is that serious? Is that something that you, for the most part, unless they have chronic problems, you just kind of put a Kleenex into their nose and hold it, kids, until it stops bleeding? How do you do that?
Often this time of year, the children are more apt to get nosebleeds because the air is drier. We're in the dry areas of the house and the school and that type of thing. So they're more apt to get the nosebleed. If you can humidify the air, that will help just moisturize the air, so they're not as apt to get the nosebleeds. The best thing for nosebleeds is to put pressure on. It's just as you put pressure on the arm that was bleeding, you put pressure on the nose. So just pinch the nose shut and hold it there in place for 10 minutes. Now, a young child...
Let them breathe through their mouth.
Right. We're not stopping the breathing here. An older child was able to do that by themselves, but a younger child, say 2-3, you're going to have to sit there and hold it for them. And that's a good time to read them a book while you're holding them, or let them watch a video or something like that, in order to just keep them calm and to keep the pressure on that nose.
Or hold your nose at the same time. And hey, how funny we talk. You know, just take their mind off of it.
Right. Make a game of it. Absolutely. You'll want to have them tip their head forward. That way you can tell when it stopped bleeding and when the bleeding is continuing. And also it prevents them from letting the blood run down the back of their throat and swallowing that blood, and then they get sick to their stomach and vomit, and then you've got a really mess to clean up. So basically lean forward, put pressure on their nose until the bleeding stops. Don't put something up into the nose. My kids were apt to like put a Kleenex up in there or something like that. Well, often when you take that Kleenex out, then it opens up the scab and it starts bleeding again. So basically just put the pressure on the outside of the nose, and that will stop the bleeding in 99% of the cases.
And if you have this, do you need to take precautions afterwards? You got an open wound in a place that for most of us we don't think is the most sterile. Is there things you need to do? Do you need to rinse it out once in a while? Do you need to just cross your fingers and say the body is supposed to take care of this?
Well, and the body does take care of it. It's often just a very small blood vessel that's kind of got a little crack in, and is why it's bleeding.
And because there's so much moisture up there anyway, you're adding the red pigment to all the other stuff that's up there, so it looks maybe like there's a lot more too.
Absolutely. It looks like a lot more blood than there actually is often. And so basically, you don't want to put any ointment on there or anything like that, and you don't want to try to get that clot out, because then it's going to bleed again. You don't want to cause any more trauma to it. So basically just let it resolve on its own. Don't blow the nose aggressively until it's all healed, because it can blow that clot out and can cause trouble with that.
Is it one of the parts of the body that tends to heal over faster? I heard like the mouth, if you have an injury in there, that kind of goes faster because it has to. It's in a wet environment. It better do something. Mm-hmm. Is the moist nasal cavity also part of that?
It's a mucous membrane, and any kind of mucous membrane does heal itself more quickly than outside the body. So it's more apt to heal more quickly and resolve itself without incident.
But if you have continuing problems, is that something you need to see a doctor about? Can it be symptomatic of other things that are going on because you have weak blood vessels or something that's going on?
It could be a signal that there's something going on. Some people, that's a way that they can find out that they have high blood pressure, or it may be a way that they can tell that they have more allergic to some kind of things. But often it's caused by trauma, they're rough housing, and they bump into somebody's elbow or something like that, where you know the reason for the bleeding, and it's just easily resolved.
And if they bump their nose and it's 30 degrees out of tilt, then you know something's broken. You better get them in.
That's a good time to put some ice on it and to help some of the swelling go down as well, or else I'll get those raccoon eyes as well.
Why don't we get on to burns? There's a lot of myths and a lot of home remedies and a lot of things Grandma said you should do, and there's a lot of things Grandma shouldn't have done.
Well, one of the best treatments for burns is to cool it. You'll want to cool it down as quickly as you can. Grandma was right about that. And so put it in a glass of water, under a running water, something like that, especially for those little burns, those, touch something hot and it's blistered, it's red, that type of thing. A first degree burn is usually able to be treated at home. You just cool it off and just cover it and keep it clean and dry.
Give a little kiss to the kid and
say,
it's going to be fine. You got an owie.
It's going to hurt for a while. That's right. I like to use aloe for those kinds of things as well. Either the plant itself, or there is the aloe cream that seems to work well for those first degree burns, which would include sunburn as well. Now the second degree burns are the ones that get the blisters. Okay, this is when you get something splattered from the stove, that type of thing. And if you have a blister, you don't want to pop that blister, because that is able to get a source of infection into it. So keep that blister in place as long as you can, because it is sealing that new skin that's developing underneath that blister and preventing that infection from happening.
It's sort of like its own Band-Aid.
Exactly. So you'll want to keep it covered. Again, you'll want to cool it immediately to take the fire out of it. Now, if a second degree burn is over a large area of the body, or if it's like over an entire hand, or even if it's around the mouth or the nose, that would be time that you need to call 911 or get them to medical treatment immediately. One thing that's not well known is that if there is a burn around the mouth or the nose, there's a good chance that child also inhaled some hot fumes, something hot. And so there could be burning and swelling of the air passage as well. And so you'll want to get them treatment, even though the burn may not seem significant. You want to get them checked out because you don't want them to have the airway cut off on those things.
Scarring back there is not something you want.
Right, right.
And third degree, the biggie?
Third degree is the biggie, and that is when it's past blistering. The burn area itself looks kind of charred, maybe, or just kind of, you
medium
can tell
rare.
It's deeper.
Medium rare.
Right. It's
blackened like on the grill.
Okay,
it's done.
It's pretty gruesome there, actually. But you want to, again, cool it as quickly as you can. That would be a time to call 911 or get them to the emergency room immediately to be cared for as well. And you'll want to you don't want to put ice directly on a burn. You'll want to put maybe cool water on it or a cold, you know, maybe put some ice cubes in the water that you're using. Someone that has like a third degree burn, you could maybe take a towel or something that's cool and put it on them. But you don't want to put a lot of ice on them because sometimes the ice can actually cause more burning as
then
well.
Then you add the burn and frostbite at the same time.
Right, exactly.
And cells there are kind of damaged to begin with, so it doesn't take much to send them further down the road.
Right, and burns hurt. Burns mm-hmm. are painful. And so if you have a burn that needs to be treated, go ahead and put that hand in a bucket of water and bring them, bucket and all, to the emergency room. Don't worry about trying to clean it or to in any way treat it yourself. Just go ahead and cover it with something because that helps keep the air out and keep it from hurting so much. So then we will give them something for pain in the emergency room and then work at cleaning and treating them.
But anything you do, water, make sure it's clean.
Right.
Because you don't want to add to the problem by getting infections or germs or dirt or anything in there that's just going to make it worse down the road when they get the treatment.
Absolutely. And you don't want to put anything that's oil-based on it as well. Grandma said to put butter on it.
Not a
good idea. Because that just traps that heat in there and keeps it from actually getting the air it needs, and so it just kind of makes it keep on burning. So nothing petroleum-based, nothing butter, no ointments on it. Now, sometimes you can find first aid cream that says for burns, and that would be the only kind of salve or anything you'd want to put on, but nothing that's an ointment or anything that's petroleum-based. You'll want to not use that to treat it.
Okay, what about sunburn? I mean, everybody's, you know, sunblocking and everything else these days, but kids are kids. They run outside and, you know, the sunblock gets washed off in the sprinklers and you're stuck with a kid who's beet red.
Right. And it really is important to keep that sunscreen on and to use a strong sunscreen and to reapply it, you know, after they've been under the sprinklers. So prevention is the best thing for sunburn. But if you get in at night and they are beet red, you'll want to cool them. I mean, use some kind keep them cool, use a cloth or something to cool them off. And then something like aloe, they have that aloe that you can put on, that salve that you can put on, or else the aloe plant works well as well. Give them something like Tylenol or Motrin because it hurts, you know.
And they have like sprays that are supposed to take the sting out of it. Is that giving kids kind of a wrong signal? Because this is supposed to hurt for a reason. That's why the body does it, so you don't do it again.
Unfortunately, the children are not fast learners, and so it's good to take care of them and make them quit hurting, and so, you know, do what it can to take the pain away if you can. So, okay. Sure. But yeah, the best thing for sunburns is to prevent them ever from happening is the best treatment.
Now, they can go to second degree, can't they? They can blister. I mean, they can do all kinds of things. It isn't just, you know, the redness and the soreness. It can go beyond that, depending on how long they're out there and not thinking about anything until they get home.
Right, and we often see this more in the adolescents or teenagers, where they think that they're unfoul. They can do anything. You know, they just think that they can get by with anything, and they'll never have issues. Well, then they do, and then that's when they're worried and complaining. And so, yes, it can get to second degree, and so that's when you may need to go see a physician if it gets to be a second degree sunburn, because it does hurt and you can get infection if it's blistered like that.
Why is a sunburn warm to the touch? Is it just blood vessels that are opened up trying to heal all the damage there? Because it seems like once you got in the house, it shouldn't actually feel physically warm anymore because you're not in the sun, you're in a cool building, usually with air conditioning.
Well, it's the body's natural reaction to the burn, and it's the way of doing the healing. And yes, it does actually feel hot to the touch. And so it's, you know, it turns red, it's really warm, and it actually swells as well. And so, yes, it is quite painful.
Avoiding it's the best.
That's exactly.
Okay, kids get broken bones. I mean, for some kids, it was a rite of passage, and they did it several times and didn't seem to learn. But, I mean, obviously that's ER material. But you still have to get them there without doing any more damage, and you need to know when it's an ambulance or whether you can get in the car, Jimmy, hold your arm, and let's get to the ER. I mean, is there any telltale sign, or do you just have to go by parental instinct in this?
A lot of it you just have to go by instinct. And when we were in the emergency room, there would be many times someone would come in and say, I hurt my arm or my leg or my ankle, and we couldn't really tell just looking, because it's until you get an x-ray, you can't really tell if it's broken. Now, obviously, there are those obvious breaks where it's just turned the wrong way, and you know without any question if it's broken or not.
Bone sticking out is a good sign.
Absolutely. And so if the bone is sticking out, you'll want to be sure you keep it extra clean. You'll want to cover it with a very clean cloth, or that'd be the time to use your sterile gauze out of your first aid kit, because any kind of infection in a bone can be long-time healing and can be quite serious. But if it's one way to tell if it's broken or not is to compare it to the other side. So if the finger is hurting, well, look at the other hand and see, is it bent differently than the other hand? And our arms, you know, have the child stick out their arms and see if one is misshaped or not. Then it would be obvious that yes, they are needing medical attention. Go ahead and put some ice on, whether you think it's broken or not. Go ahead and put some ice on and get it. The swelling to reduce. You'll want to rest it. Don't let them use it a lot. You know, even if it's a sprain, you'll want to let them rest it for a while and to get healed. So you'll want to put ice on, you'll want to rest it, and elevate it would be a good thing as well. And so that we used to talk a lot about splints and how to splint a broken bone and that type of thing. And we actually found that often people were causing more damage by trying to get it splinted. So if you have to splint, I mean, you're out in the middle of the woods and there's no cell phone coverage, you know, that type of thing, what you want to do is splint it in the position that you found it. So don't try to straighten that wound or that limb or whatever. Keep it crooked, keep it in the position you found it, because just moving it around can cause more tissue damage to the muscles in the surrounding area as well.
I suppose if the bone is fragmented at the breaking point, you could break more chips off.
You could just cause more damage. So basically, keep it in the position you found it. And often, if it's like a broken arm, like forearm or something like that, the child could actually hold it themselves and support it themselves. It's kind of our natural instinct is to hold it, to keep it from hurting. If for some reason you would have to splint it or something like that, you could actually use a safety pin and pin the sleeve to the front of the sweatshirt, and that would be kind of an automatic, easy to use splint. But no matter what if you splint it, you'll want to be sure that it's got good blood flow and that you are not compromising, causing more pain instead of less. If it's a large bone, if you can't transport, if you got other issues that you can't hold the child and drive at the same time, then it's safer to go ahead and call 911 and get some help.
Okay, what about head injuries? I mean, kids bump, they fall against the coffee table, they fall against the kitchen counters, or get up from underneath the table and bump their heads. And, you know, when is it? Is there telltale clues that it's more than a bump, that you better get this checked out? I mean, do you look for dizziness? Do you look for a stunned look on their face? Or is there something that you need to know above and beyond, you know, beyond, well, don't do that anymore and you won't hit your head?
There's a lot of talk these days about concussions and how important they are. And rightly so. Concussions are more serious than what we grew up with. You know, before it was like, oh, brush it off and get going. But now it's more, this is something to take seriously. And so one of the main things about concussions is it's serious at the beginning, but if you allow that child to go out and re-injure themselves after they have a concussion, then they're more likely to cause severe and long-term effects of that. And so if the child fell down on the ice and bumped their head, just have them be quiet, seek medical attention if they seem like they do have a concussion. Now you may say, well, how do I know if it's a concussion or not?
A lot of parents will tell you the kids are kind of loopy to begin with.
Well, one of the things is that they just don't act themselves. Okay, this is a child that's always up and running around, and they're just now sitting quietly, just don't seem like themselves. A headache that won't go away. Of course, anything that's like vomiting, unconsciousness, seizures, of course, you'd want to get help immediately for those kinds of things. You can also look at their pupils, and if one pupil is large and one pupil is small, that's a sign of serious injury, and you'll want to get them to the hospital as well. But the most telltale sign is that there's a personality change. This is not my child. They are just not themselves. They don't eat. They just lay around. They're listless. And that would be a time to go get some medical attention.
Are these instant symptoms or do they develop over time? Because when kids are hurt, they're look what I did, and they run to you and stuff. But is this something you need to look at long term after that type of an injury that, maybe in 2 hours, if they're not back to playing around and getting into trouble again, that maybe there's something I better look at?
Sure. It's up to 2 weeks after a head injury happens that you can kind of look back and say, oh, maybe it was the head injury back there. So yes, it can be a long-term kind of a slow, insidious kind of thing. And so if the child the next day doesn't seem like themselves, isn't eating, is throwing up, then don't automatically think, oh, it's the flu. Think, oh, he did bump his head yesterday, and it may be worth a trip to the doctor to get it checked out.
Because the flu would likely have a fever where the concussion probably wouldn't.
Right, there's usually no fever with a concussion.
And
right.
One little sign that if you want to maybe check that out, then you say, no fever, he's feeling like he's ill, and sure, there's a problem.
Well, parenting requires the detective work into trying to get to the bottom of it, especially when the child is too young to talk, and you just got to try to figure out what's going on with this child, and is he sick, is he injured, is he hurt, and if so, where?
Choking. Kids take a big gumball, and they decide you're going to have that gumball, whether you say it's not safe for them or not, and then it gets kind of stuck in the back of their mouth, and they're... And your reaction may be to do the Heimlich on them, and you're a big adult and they're a little kid, and you have to know what you're doing at that point so you don't hurt them.
Right, and this is one of the life-saving things that unfortunately people have to do, because choking happens often in a child, and no matter how careful a parent is, they often will grab those things and put them in their mouth. If they're under 1 year old, we recommend not doing the Heimlich or the abdominal thrust on them. They don't have enough fat on their abdomen, and you can actually cause internal injuries if you do the abdominal thrust on them. So what you do is what automatically you do is you turn them over on their back and slap them between their shoulder blades and hit them like 5 times there. If that doesn't jar it loose, then you turn them over onto their back and push in the middle of their chest 5 times.
Do you first open the mouth and just see if you can grab it? I mean, if it's like a toy, soldier or something, I mean, there may be an arm sticking out that you can just...
Sure. If you see it, you can easily... It's fine to go ahead and grab it. But don't put your fingers in there trying to see if you can see something, because then you could actually force that object further down or else cause trauma and swelling of that object. So basically what you're wanting to do is just look in the mouth and see if you can visualize something. If you can, then you'll be able to get it out. And the way to tell your child is choking is that they're not able to breathe, they're not able to cough, they're not able to cry, they're not talking. I mean, a child who comes up and says, Mom, I'm choking, is not really choking, okay? It's the one who are silent, who have this startled look in their eyes that you need to do something.
And they're probably not breathing, which means they're going to get blue quickly and you need help quickly.
That's correct. So a child that's over one, then you can get behind them and do the abdominal thrust on them. And just take your fist and come up behind them, take your fist and push into their abdomen and until it's released.
It basically is just trying to get enough air pressure to pop it out?
Right. There's always a little bit of air in your lungs, and so you're using the air in your lungs to push that object up and out of your airway.
Reverse plunger.
I suppose.
All right. Getting kind of near the end of our time here, and I'm sure people have a whole lot more questions about what to do with their kids. Is there good websites to go to, places they can go to find about first aid for children? It's, you know, a little different than adults in some respects at times, and the time to do it is before there's a problem.
Absolutely, and you often don't have time to look up at that point, oh, what do I do for a burn? It's something that you need to know and be ready to use.
You were showing me before the show you had an app.
That's
on
right.
Your smartphone, but even at that point, by the time you're looking up the app and waiting for it to download and everything, things are getting worse.
Right, right. And you would only use that app if there are two or three of you standing around and one of you is administering first aid and the other one saying, well, what else can we do? And being able to look it up at that point. The American Heart Association is a great website to go to, AmericanHeartAssociation.org, or the American Red Cross, which would be redcross.org, are both very good sites and have a lot of information.
They're reputable.
Absolutely.
You're not going to get somebody who's still advocating putting butter on a burn.
There you go. And I would encourage parents to take a first aid class. It's something that most people are going to have to use sometime in their life in order to take care of their child or their friends or family.
Well, I appreciate you taking time with us today to maybe help parents not panic and have a little idea what to do and where resources are. They can find out ahead of time how to take care of this stuff that's going to pop up. If you have kids, something is going to pop up because they're kids.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Our guest today on the program has been Marie Most. She's with Schurer Hospital. She's talking about first aid for kids. It is our first in the month-long series we're going to have on Parenting Awareness Month, and I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.